Hi, this is Jill Murphy from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insights, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. Today we have another special episode of Pharmacy Focus, where our very own host from the Public Health Matters podcast, Dr. Christina Madison, joins Dr. Tina Opie and Dr. Bio Curry-Winchell, who discuss speaking your voice and amplifying your message through platforms like TED and TEDx. They are all recent TED Talk speakers, and we were honored to have them take the time to be on our show. We hope you enjoy listening.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Christina Madison, your host for today's special edition of Pharmacy Focus. I am so excited to bring two extraordinary guests for us today. We will be talking all things speaking your voice and amplifying your message through platforms like TED and TEDx. So without further ado, I will bring in these two incredible ladies, Dr. Bio Curry-Winchell and Dr. Tina Opie. I met these two fantastic women during my TEDx journey when we all spoke at TEDx Reno this past May. And we just immediately connected because of many reasons, but I am so happy that we have stayed in touch and really have done so much to amplify each other's voices and really to talk about the importance of spreading your message. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and have Dr. Curry-Winchell introduce herself and her background, and then I'll go ahead and have Dr. Tina Opie talk about how she ended up on the TED stage, and then we're just going to dive into some questions. Dr. Curry-Winchell.
Well, thank you, Dr. Madison. Thank you for having myself and Tina. This is just an amazing opportunity to really share and continue the dialogue that we were able to start through the TEDx program. So grateful to be here, excited to kind of discuss and so forth. A little bit about my background. I am a family medicine, board certified family medicine, urgent care physician, as well as a medical director of Carbon Health St. Mary's and also Washoe County. And through that, I also am able to just really bring awareness and advocacy to health inequities and disparities. And that is part of my work and every single thing that I do. And when this opportunity came with the TEDx, it really provided a bigger platform to share this message that we are all working towards in different ways of the importance of really closing that gap when we talk about health inequities and disparities, as well as medically racially based algorithms. And that has been something that I am continuing to, you know, push the needle in discussing how it affects health outcomes. So I'm excited to be here and thank you again for having me.
Thank you so much. Not to mention the fact that you are a regular contributor for medical information, for some amazing health-related blogs, as well as a routine health medical contributor for both local and national media outlets. So something that I'm very close to my heart, and obviously hope to get to the same level that you are at some point with your exposure, being able to do medical commentary. So thank you for that, and thank you for being such a trailblazer. Dr. Opie.
Dr. Tina Opie, I am a tenured professor at Babson College, as well as the founder of Shared Sisterhood and Opie Consulting Group. And this is my, I guess, fourth career. So I was a banker and a consultant, became a full-time professor, and now an entrepreneur. And I would say the common theme between all of those careers is I've always been very curious about why things work and operate the way that they do. and how different people from different backgrounds navigate those experiences. And that's what led me to create the framework of shared sisterhood and really develop it. I co-authored it with Dr. Beth Livingston, and the book's coming out in October. And that led me to want to do a TEDx talk on shared sisterhood. And then I was blessed to meet the two of you and many other people. But I would say that you, the three of us, were like triplets when we were there after we met, because it really is wonderful when you can be your full self. You can share notes on how you, we've all learned how to navigate, and we can just lift each other up and elevate each other. So I'm really honored to be here. Thank you for having me, Dr. Madison or Christine. Okay.
Just don't call me late for dinner, right? Like, that's what my grandmother used to say.
Exactly.
Yeah. So just wanted to dive in a little bit more detail about like your journey and like sort of how you decided on the topic that you chose for your idea worth spreading. So for me, obviously my background is that I'm a clinical pharmacist by training. But then, you know, with everything going on with the pandemic and seeing those health inequities and, you know, structural racism and all of these things that led to poor outcomes, and particularly in the BIPOC community, around COVID and access to care, led me to the topic that I chose, which was the importance of trusted health messengers. And the fact that when we picked people that didn't look and sound like us, we were shocked and somehow surprised that we didn't have acceptance of vaccines and acceptance of mask wearing and testing and all of these things. And it's like, you know, you have to recognize that people don't just make decisions based on the information itself, but actually who's providing that information and whether or not they relate and identify with them. And I think that's part of why we all like came together and were so immediately drawn to one another, is because we have this similarity. Granted, you know, not all Black women like come together and are like, you know, kumbaya, and like you said, Tina, like triplets, but I think it's that mutual respect and that mutual understanding for the drive and the professional dedication, and again, really wanting to uplift and to amplify each other's messaging. And so for me, it was really that public health focus and wanting to make sure that I talked about something that I saw that was a huge issue and a need. But I'm curious, like, what were your guys' thoughts about, you know, how you came up with your idea worth sharing or your idea worth spreading, since that is the, you know, the thought process and the theme around TED.
Do you have a request on who goes first?
Whomever, my darling. Tina, you never have a problem speaking up, so you go right ahead.
Well, you're right. And it's, you know, that's been since I was a little girl. You can get me in trouble, but this is a good time. Being able to speak up actually lent itself to me pursuing TEDx and hopefully eventually the main TED stage. I have a friend who's one of the TEDx speakers who knew some of the organizers, and they encouraged actually five of us to apply. Two of us were accepted. I was one of those people who was blessed to be accepted. And for me, the idea of sharing shared sisterhood was a no-brainer, because right now I'm sort of having a convergence of my professional passion, my personal passions, as well as my time. I've actually taken unpaid leave from my institution because shared sisterhood and OP Consulting Group have grown so exponentially that I wanted to see if this dream would take flight. And it has. And it felt like sharing the message of shared sisterhood with TEDx would be a great way to get the message out there. Because I think, as you said, Christina, one of the things that bonded us together was our messages. And their collective messages, their messages about how we can take care of ourselves, of Black people, and of society at large, but it's specifically we're giving voice to historically marginalized voices. And when I had the opportunity to speak about shared sisterhood, I could not turn it down. I mean, I absolutely was going to pursue this wholeheartedly. We can talk a little bit about the process, because it was a lot of work to get that shared sisterhood talk down to about 12 minutes, trying to cram an entire book into that time. But it was a wonderful experience that has exposed a lot of people to the message. And I think that passion and purpose that we all have in common was really reflected when each of us were on the TEDx stage.
Yes, and sort of the shared excitement on that very first day when we all showed up and we're like, holy moly, this is happening. So Bio, do you want to talk a little bit about how you came up with your idea worth spreading?
Yes. So in my world, there's always been a blend of course, seeing patients, but advocacy and really trying to reshape health literacy for the BIPOC community. And then, of course, highlighting, you know, those inequities that we face every single day. And so I was approached, about the work that I've been doing nationally and locally, and asked, you know, would I like to apply? And I said, sure. So I applied, and I was just so surprised that I was actually accepted, even though when people say, would you like to apply? I never really felt like anything was going to come from it. So when I received the acceptance, my heart just started to swell, because I was like, all right, it's go time. And I think all of us can understand that piece, because as Black women, as Black people, when you get an opportunity to really share and highlight, you are going to give it your all. That's just part of our makeup and what we're going to do. And so I knew there were different elements that I wanted to find a way to create a story of understanding about representation in healthcare and how and why we needed to improve the numbers. In my talk, I talk about, as a Black female physician, I represent, you know, approximately 2% of physicians in the U.S. That's a problem when we look at our overall population and when we talk about the inequities and disparities that are happening in healthcare. I also wanted to paint a picture of the historical mistrust that the BIPOC community, and I really focused on the African American community, of what we faced. And so my goal was to write a story where people could have an understanding of the past, of the current, and really present a forecast of what's to come and why we need to make a change in that space. And so it was hard, as Tina mentioned, to really narrow down my talk. It was 11 minutes and 10 seconds. I'll know that number by heart forever. But I really wanted people to have an understanding of what it's like to be a Black female physician, what obstacles we face, and the challenges that our patients face every single day. So I'm grateful for this opportunity, and it was such an amazing opportunity that I will always relish in, and I'm so grateful.
You know, I really want to, you know, acknowledge and affirm the fact that you made that statement. And I think, you know, when we look at the number of, you know, physicians in particular of color, that the numbers have not changed very much since like the 1950s. And as, you know, someone who had a grandfather who was a male Black physician who worked in California, it's insane to me that in 50 or actually now 70 years that we have not done more to make sure that our providers, and this isn't just for physicians, but it's everyone. It's who's educating our next generation of professionals. It's healthcare professionals. It's all professionals, right? So that's doctors, that's lawyers, that's anybody who is reaching this higher education and higher degree, that there's not being more done to have the individuals in that job reflecting the communities that they serve, as well as leading to an example so that more individuals of color choose to go into that career. So I always say, if you can see it, you can be it. But if you don't see someone who looks like you, you're not even thinking that that's something that you could even possibly be able to do. And so for me, you know, 2 years ago, I went to TEDx Reno. It was right before everything shut down from the pandemic. I remember it vividly because it was leap year and it was February 29th. And so I attended this conference and I was so blown away, and I took the time to meet with the speakers afterwards, and I verbalized that this was something that I wanted to do, that this was a professional goal for me. And then fast forward 2 years later, and when I applied, I reached out to Brett, who is the curator, and asked, you know, are you guys going to do this in person again? And he said, absolutely. We're about to, you know, release the information about applications, and found out that during the review process, that one of those speakers is now part of, you know, the TEDx team and is helping with the selection process, and remembered meeting me and the fact that I had said that I wanted to do a TED Talk. And I don't know if that, you know, helped, but I think speaking your intentions and really being clear about your professional goals is so important to you getting to that next level, in addition to being able to see someone who looks like you that's doing the thing that you want to do, because there weren't anyone that looked like me on that TED stage. And so I hope that the three of us are able to inspire the next generation of people who want to share their ideas.
I love that.
I love it. This is why we're triplets. See, we're all.
So, I mean, so I guess a couple, another question that I have for you guys is, so the process of obviously like getting the idea was one thing, but then the process of actually like whittling down your talk to a very short amount of time. And then for the people who are listening to this and are thinking about maybe doing a TED Talk or something similar, where they can amplify their message and their voice, understanding that this is not like people who are professional speakers, because most of the time professional speakers have some sort of like visual aid or something that they can use to aid them in their presentation, and that they're not memorizing something for a finite amount of time. So this talk was memorized, right? So you, me, we memorized our, mine was, I think, almost 9 minutes. You know, Tina's was 11. About yours was 10. And so we were told that we had 12 minutes, like max, and that it had to be memorized. And this was months of preparation. So we found out, I believe, in February, right? So the application process was January. We found out in February. And then this was like several months of getting it down to that tiny little message at the end. So I don't know if you guys want to talk about like how you felt about that process. For me, it was quite difficult. I think I had a very different experience than you guys.
Bio, do you want to share?
Sure. Yes, I'll go first. I'm so glad that you're mentioning this, because a lot of people do not know how difficult it is to really go through this process. And so I remember talking to Brett after I got accepted, and he really talked about all of the deliverables that had to be met. And in my mind, I'm sure with the rest of you, we all have full-time jobs. And so I was like, how am I going to do this? Even though I knew I was going to, as you mentioned, Christina, being intentional with what you needed to get done, but I had to find a way to kind of put it at the forefront while not losing the priorities that I needed to continue to run my household. I've got two little girls, and as well as running a couple of hospital systems, being the medical director, and then also doing, you know, broadcasting and writing. And so I was like, okay, how am I going to fit this in? And so it was such a beautiful task, but it was so difficult to really make sure. I had to put it in, on my calendar, and make sure that I, every day, I worked on my script. I read it to people. You know, we had to go, I shared it with people, and we had meetings that we had to commit to, and all that whole process was very intense. And I'm glad you said it, Christina, because it was extremely difficult. And the memorization process, people are often surprised that once you write it, yes, we have to memorize it. So after you memorize it, which is actually quite hard, you have to deliver it as if it's not memorized. So there's all of these, you know, steps that it's a true journey that you have to go through to even get to a level of being able to share it on a major stage. And then you have to take in presentation and being able to quell your nerves or anxiety so you can give the talk what it deserves, all of the hard work that you have really put forward into this script. And so it was a process. I've never gone through anything like that before. And I think this part was important to me because people often said, well, you're on national TV, you do live TV interviews. Wasn't it easy? And I said, absolutely not. This was so hard and so different than a question answer or being on live TV. So yes, it was an amazing experience, but one of the hardest experiences I've ever gone through in that space.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing I can do is tell a story to describe my experience. So as Christina shared, we get accepted and then we start having monthly meetings with the TEDx Reno team. And there's about 7 to 8 people. And I think there were 8 people on my first meeting, and we were instructed to read our script. Now, I had no idea exactly what to put in a TEDx script. And I had been told that there was going to be a lot of evolution of your speech. So I didn't want to spend a ton of time perfecting the first draft because I knew that that wasn't going to be the final draft. So I put a script together, and I took notes from a presentation that I had done on shared sisterhood and then crafted that into a speech. And I taped myself doing it. It was less than 12 minutes. But when I started reading it out loud with the team, I began to, in the moment, fill in gaps because you can start to see, okay, this would make more sense if I said that. So I finish the speech and I just read it. I'm not delivering it. And there's about 8 people, including Dr. Brett, and then there's 7 other folks on the call, Bren and some other folks. 7 of them love this. You are so great. This is amazing. You're a natural, and you also have clearly practiced, and you know, I've done television work and media work and panels and all that. So good. First, second, third, 7th person, love it. Get to Dr. Brett. He said, well, I'm going to have to disagree. I didn't like it. Tina, how long do you think that was? And I was like, maybe 12 minutes, 14 minutes and 12 seconds or whatever he said. You were all over the place. You have too many points, too many ideas. So I share that story with you all, if you're interested in doing a TEDx talk or a TED talk, to recognize that it's totally different, as Bio and Christina have said, than any other public speaking event I've done. And I do a lot of public speaking. I'd never have to memorize my speech. This was the first time I've memorized a speech since what? Church? Easter Sunday? I mean, really? And we didn't go to church on a regular basis, but I remember having when I was little, but we had to memorize those kinds of special occasion speeches. So that was the first feedback that I got was, I'm not crazy about it. So then I went back and I revised it. And then I got it down eventually to about 8 minutes. And that's when Brett said, this is awesome. Now you can add some of the meat back on it. So you have to memorize. You have to practice. And the way that I practiced was I typed out the script And then I would read it to myself and I would record myself while I was reading it. And then I would listen to, back to this to the script because I'm a professor also, so I can tell you, I'm not a real doctor like Bio and Christina. I mean, I'm a management professor. But I
You
do
are real, honey. You
know.
are definitely
You know what I'm
real. Do
saying?
not
Yes,
dampen your
you
shine. Do
are.
not dampen your shine.
You know the whole debate, right? There are some people who say you shouldn't call yourself a doctor if you're not a medical doctor. And I cannot stand the sight of blood or like bodily fluids. I'm definitely out of that qualification. I am a doctor, though. I have a PhD. One of the things we learn when we teach is that people have different kinds of learning. So a tip that I have for anyone who's interested in applying is to think about the different modalities of learning. So you can read something, you can speak something out loud, you can hear it back when it's repeated back to yourself. You can even put up sort of, I had mnemonic devices, I had visual things that were helping to cue certain words. Because in addition to memorizing it, you need to come in under a particular time. And so I think April was the last, or maybe it was the beginning of May, the last time that we did the TEDx Reno committee. And that went really well. But I was very nervous. I did talk to two people. I shared the speech with my co-author, Dr. Beth Livingston, and she gave some feedback. And then I ended up rearranging some of the things, probably in April, because it made it clearer. The hilarious thing is, I decided that I was going to enjoy the TEDx Reno stage and the experience, and I was not going to do what I usually do, which is always think about the future. I was going to walk on that stage and actually appreciate being on the stage and look at the audience. So I walk out on stage, I say my first line, I'm appreciating the audience, and I forgot my second line. So I
I
did.
didn't know that. This
I
is
didn't know that
surprising.
either.
I didn't know. You didn't say that. You didn't
Well,
tell us
so
that.
I forget. Well, probably because I was traumatized. So I got out there. I'm literally looking at the faces of the people in the audience. I'm thinking about my mother who picked cotton. You know what I mean? I'm literally having this moment of blessing, feeling so blessed. And I forgot my second line. And that's when I did the TEDx. No. I started talking to the audience. That's why I did that. So if you watch my video, you'll see that I start talking to the audience members, which you're really, I guess, not supposed to do, but we can talk about what that rule, because I think there's some norms that we could challenge. But that's why I did that, because as soon as I said that, I'm like, okay, here we go. And I did say some things out of order, but then it came back to the message was communicated.
Well, I mean, that makes me feel slightly better because my experience, as you guys both know, is that they stopped me a minute into my speech because the audio wasn't good. So, like, I ended up actually doing my talk three times because it was about getting the audio, and it, you know, they tell you that. You are giving a performance to be recorded. It just happens to be in front of a live audience. And it really is a production. So that's why you have these hard stops in timing, because like there's a whole production crew behind there. I mean, like our production was probably on par with like Super Bowl halftime
Yeah.
show. Like
Didn't they
our
show?
the way that the production for our particular TEDx and I didn't realize this until after, but apparently TEDx Reno is like one of the most difficult of the TEDx's to get accepted
It's
to.
third in the nation.
Yeah, like I'm like, okay, this is where your naivete comes into. I'm like, sure, I'll just apply. Like, of course I'm
Okay.
gonna get accepted the first time around.
Christina. Can I who by who are number one and number two? You know everybody wants to know what that. Who's
That's
one
a
and two?
great question. I've never even checked. I just know they're, Brett told me they were number three in the nation. So
Yeah, it's
I need to
super
check who's one and two.
competitive.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
But we
So I
are
ended up
ranked.
doing my talk three times.
Christina, we felt so bad for you. I mean, and I
I
remember this is also when Sister Girl and both Bio and I came out. We were right there hugging Christina.
Yes.
She looked amazing. Like, you need some snacks? You need a drink, girl?
Yeah, we were in the makeup room. We're like, well, how can we help you? We were like,
Yeah.
and it was awesome. And it was just this automatic, where we is the word cocooned, and not that you had to have it, but we wanted to give it.
Yeah.
And so it was just that feeling of we got you, we have you, and we will help you. And that was just it just showed that this friendship was authentic, and it was of real depth and meaning. I felt it right away.
Yeah, it was. And then, I mean, you. The thing is, as Christina said, many times when you, if you're in front of an audience, we cater to the audience. But when you're doing a TED Talk or a TEDx, like, you have to remember that it's the YouTube video that is going to live on. And so they give you, I don't know if we want to go into those tips, Christina, about, for example, when you get on the stage and they adjust the camera, you are pretty much supposed to stand squarely in the center of that red circle. And they say, you may move to the left or to the right, but don't move up or back, because that will require the camera to refocus on you. So in addition to memorizing, you pretty much, if you're like me, I mean, when I teach a class or lecture, I usually walk about 5 miles.
I'm a wanderer.
Who was it? Akilah and the Bee, she could spell better when she was jumping rope. I mean, there's a connection between movement and thinking. And so you have to know that information so cold that you are straight up standing for 12 minutes or less, delivering that message in front of a huge audience. But I actually liked it, because Brett would tell us, if you mess up, don't make any big movements or gestures. Don't say, oh my gosh, I messed up. Just pause and then repeat the last line where you want to start from. And that signals to the amazing production crew that they need to edit it out. So the TED Talks that you see are edited. And I did not know that. I thought that it was just people delivering these amazing talks. There's a lot of editing that goes in. It's still an accurate, authentic message, but I think it's important for those of you who feel like you have to be perfectionist. That is not the case.
That is correct. That was really helpful, because then you had this opportunity of forgiveness and opportunity of a second round that you knew if you messed up, which was really helpful. And one thing I didn't share, 2 weeks before we did our TED Talk, as we mentioned how we have to have our meetings and so forth, the group suggested that I move my beginning opening to the end, and the end to the beginning. And my, I started sweating. I was like, but then I was like, okay, I have to trust the process. And I think that's something we have kind of discussed, that although it's an uncomfortable sometimes process where you're getting this feedback, what do I take in? What do I not? It really is for the better good of that script and that message. And you have to be malleable and accept it, because it really can help you create the best thing possible. And so I just share that I don't think I ever told both of you that 2 weeks before I had to flip my script. So it was completely opposite. And so I had to work on transitions, and change it and rememorize the beginning to the end and flip it. So that was, I thought when I walked on the stage, I was going to go with the old version. I was like, is the new version going to come out? So
one thing I will say as well is, so like that 2 week meeting right before, we're all very high performing professionals. And, you know, I'm not used to being told that I'm not exceptional. I mean, granted, I don't have an inflated view of self, but like having that just very like blanket, like, nope, this isn't good. Like it was hard. Like it was a hard sell. Like, and I will be honest with you, like I considered not doing it. But I was like, you know, this was a professional goal for me. And I knew I needed to get the message out, but it was scary. Like, you know, I had this, you know, thought process of like, am I going to be disappointing? And so I say that because I think people need to understand that, like, as fantastic as it may have looked, the way that the sausage was made was hard. And not to discount it or to tell people not to do it, it is one of the scariest, most professionally rewarding things that I've ever done.
I'm so glad you said that. It was so hard. I met with Bren and Robin. I can't tell you how many times, like, and they would meet me in my car in front of the hospital, and I would do the talk and I would stand, and they're like, nope, you need to fix this. This is wrong. And to your point where you were like, okay, I just have to trust, you know, this process, trust these women that will help me. And to their point, I mean, the fact that they would meet me at odd hours just to help, you know, deliver the best message possible, but you have this fear and anxiety that, you know, can I do this? Can I deliver this? And so I love how you said it, Christina. It is. It was so rewarding, but also extremely scary. It was intertwined.
Yeah. And I would say that this reminds me of research on imposter syndrome. And that research shows that there's correlations between the demographic or social identities that you have. So as Black women, it's not surprising that we may have experienced some imposter syndrome. But I do know that many other people felt the same way, because the bottom line is, it is difficult to remember and memorize completely. It's a soliloquy, basically. It's a soliloquy, a timed soliloquy. So I just want to encourage everyone listening, you can do it. It is very hard. And you can have a learning orientation towards this, where you say, okay, I feel intimidated by the process. I may actually fail, but I'm going to strive and push myself to learn as much as I can so that I'm not a disappointment. Because as Christina and Bio said, to myself, because honestly, for me, I had certain expectations and standards in my mind based on how well I've done at other things. And I was like, girl, you need to come correct. You cannot be pitiful. So that made me push myself.
You could never be pitiful, first of all.
I second that. Well, I second that.
Well, thank you. But you know, I mean, I think what people have to understand is that what you see on that stage from Christina and Bio is hard work. They're excellent at what they do. They also put in a lot of hard work and practice. And I tried it when I'm raising my children or talking to employees or mentoring someone or sponsoring someone. I tell them, hard work beats talent most days. So the fact that the three of us are blessed with talent and we put in the hard work, that's what you see in those videos. And so if you're willing, but if you feel like, okay, I'm not as good of a presenter as Christina or Bio, that doesn't mean that you can't do an outstanding, excellent job. It just means you have to put in the hard work. And we've provided you with some specific steps on how to do that.
Oh, you two are just incredible. You fill my cup up every time I am with you, even if it's just a brief conversation. But I'm so excited that I am able to share your amazingness with my pharmacy audience, and just understanding the importance of collaboration and mutual respect and affirmation of others, because you never know who may cross your path and who may be able to uplift you. And just really want to thank you for your time, because I know it's valuable. And I am so excited to share your greatness and looking forward to others embarking on this journey and sharing their message and amplifying their voice. And really, I would encourage our listeners to reach out to both you, to Tina and Bio, because these are extraordinary women. And if you see anything that they are doing that you want to emulate or to find out more information about, they are open to it. And that is the one thing that I will say that was so comforting throughout this process. And I wish I had met you two sooner, because I feel like my life would be more fulfilled because you are incredible women. And thank you. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for what you do for your communities. Thank you for what you do for other women.